Hello and welcome. I'm so glad you're here because today we're diving into one of the most important and honestly one of the most interesting topics in your AQA A-level business course, corporate objectives and strategy. Whether you're revising for paper one or paper three, this topic comes up again and again. And the good news? Once you really understand how strategy works, not just the definitions, but the logic behind it, you'll find it so much easier to write those high-scoring evaluation paragraphs that examiners are looking for. So here's the plan for today. We'll start by building a solid understanding of the core concepts, the objectives hierarchy, Ansoff's matrix, Porter's generic strategies, the balanced scorecard, and the triple bottom line. Then we'll move into exam technique, covering the most common mistakes candidates make and how to avoid them. After that, we'll do a quick-fire recall quiz to test what you've learned, and we'll finish with a summary and a few final tips to take into the exam hall with you. Let's get started. Let's begin at the top of the hierarchy. Every business, whether it's a small family bakery or a global corporation like Unilever, starts with a mission statement. The mission statement answers one simple question: why do we exist? It's broad, it's inspirational, and it's not measurable. Think of Tesla's mission: to accelerate the world's transition to sustainable energy. That tells you the direction, but it doesn't tell you how to get there. From the mission, a business sets its corporate objectives. These are the long-term, measurable goals that translate the mission into something concrete. A corporate objective might be achieve a 15% return on capital employed within 3 years, or increase market share in the UK grocery sector from 12% to 18% by 2027. Notice how these are specific and measurable. That's crucial. Examiners will award marks when you distinguish between a vague aspiration and a smart corporate objective. Below corporate objectives sit functional objectives, the targets set for each department: finance, marketing, human resources, and operations. These must align with the corporate objectives. If the corporate objective is growth through market development, then the marketing department's functional objective might be to launch a campaign targeting 3 new international markets. This alignment is called functional coherence, and it's something examiners love to see candidates discuss. And at the very bottom of the hierarchy, the base of the pyramid, are tactics. Tactics are short-term, operational decisions. Running a 2-for-1 promotion in January is a tactic. Deciding to reduce the price of a product by 10% this quarter is a tactic. The key distinction, and this is one of the most common mistakes in the exam, is that strategy is long-term and directional, while tactics are short-term and reactive. Don't confuse them. Now let's talk about how businesses decide which strategic direction to take. This is where Ansoff's matrix comes in, and it's one of the most frequently examined models in this topic. Igor Ansoff's matrix is a 2x2 grid. One axis represents products, existing or new. The other represents markets, existing or new. This gives us 4 strategic options. Market penetration sits in the bottom left. Existing products, existing markets. This is the lowest risk strategy. A business tries to sell more of what it already sells to the customers it already has. Think of Coca-Cola running a loyalty scheme or McDonald's offering a new meal deal. The risk is low because the business knows the product and knows the market. Product development is top left. New products, existing markets. Apple is the classic example here. Every time Apple launches a new iPhone model, it's selling a new product to its existing loyal customer base. The risk is higher because product development requires research and development investment, and there's no guarantee customers will adopt the new product. Market development is bottom right. Existing products, new markets. Greg's expanding into international markets or a UK clothing brand launching in the US would be market development. The product is proven, but the market is unfamiliar. Different consumer behavior, different regulations, different competition. And finally, diversification sits in the top right. New products, new markets. This is the highest risk quadrant. Virgin is the textbook example, moving from music retail into airlines, trains, banking, and broadband. Related diversification means moving into a business with some connection to your existing operations. Unrelated diversification, sometimes called conglomerate diversification, means moving into a completely different industry. The risk is enormous, but so can be the reward. Here's a memory hook for Ansoff. Think of the phrase, please make more decisions. Penetration, market development, product development, diversification, arranged from lowest to highest risk. Now let's move to Porter's generic strategies. Michael Porter argued that a business can only achieve sustainable competitive advantage in one of two ways: by being the lowest cost producer or by offering something genuinely differentiated that customers will pay a premium for. Cost leadership means being the cheapest producer in the industry. Aldi and Lidl are the go-to examples. They achieve cost leadership through lean operations, limited product ranges, and efficient supply chains. The key point for the exam is that cost leadership is about being the lowest cost producer, not necessarily having the lowest price. A cost leader could charge the same price as competitors and simply enjoy higher profit margins. Differentiation means offering something unique that customers value enough to pay more for. Apple charges a premium for its products because customers perceive them as superior in design, ecosystem, and brand prestige. James Dyson built a billion-pound business by differentiating vacuum cleaners, a product most people considered a commodity. Porter also identified two focus strategies, cost focus and differentiation focus, which apply these same approaches within a narrow market segment or niche. And here's the critical warning Porter gave. Businesses that try to be both low cost and differentiated risk becoming stuck in the middle, achieving neither competitive advantage and performing poorly. This is a brilliant evaluation point for your essays. Now, a word on the balanced scorecard developed by Kaplan and Norton in 1992. The traditional view of business performance was purely financial: profit, return on investment, earnings per share. Kaplan and Norton argued this was too narrow. They proposed measuring performance across four perspectives: financial, customer, internal processes, and learning and growth. The financial perspective asks, how do we look to our shareholders? The customer perspective asks, how do customers see us? The internal processes perspective asks, what must we excel at operationally? And the learning and growth perspective asks, can we continue to improve and create value? The balanced scorecard is particularly relevant when evaluating a business's strategy because it reminds you and the examiner that success isn't just about profit. A business pursuing a growth strategy might see short-term profits fall while customer satisfaction and market share improve. The balanced scorecard helps capture that nuance. Finally, let's touch on Elkington's triple bottom line and Carroll's CSR pyramid, because these often appear in evaluation questions about whether a business's strategy is sustainable. Elkington argued that businesses should measure success not just by profit, but by their impact on people and planet too, the three Ps. Carroll's CSR pyramid layers responsibilities from the base upward. Economic responsibilities first, make a profit, then legal, obey the law, then ethical, do what's right, and finally, philanthropic, give back to society. The insight for the exam is that CSR is not just altruism, it can be a strategic tool. A strong CSR reputation can differentiate a brand, attract talent, and build customer loyalty. Right, let's talk exam technique because this is where marks are won and lost. The number one mistake I see candidates make is confusing strategy with tactics. If a question asks you to evaluate a strategic decision, and you spend your answer discussing short-term promotional tactics, you will not access the higher mark levels. Strategy is long-term. Tactics are short-term. Keep that distinction crystal clear. The second big mistake is misapplying Ansoff's matrix, specifically confusing product development with diversification. Here's the test. If the business is selling to its existing customers, it's product development. If it's entering a completely new market with a new product, it's diversification. Ask yourself, does the business already have a relationship with these customers? Third, in 16 and 25 mark questions, candidates often produce what examiners call tandem analysis, a list of advantages on one side and disadvantages on the other with no judgment. This will cap you at level 3. To reach level 4, you must weigh the evidence and reach a supported conclusion. Use the AGEME framework. Answer the question directly. Justify your answer with evidence. Acknowledge that it depends on contextual factors and identify the most important factor. Fourth, always engage with the numbers in the appendices. If the case study tells you revenue grew from 40 million to 52 million pounds, calculate the percentage change. That's a 30% increase. Examiners explicitly credit candidates who manipulate data rather than simply lifting figures. And for 25 mark essays, spend 5 to 7 minutes planning. Structure your conclusion to answer the specific question first, then explain why you rejected the alternative. Allocate roughly 1 minute per mark, so a 25-mark question should take around 25 minutes. Okay, quick fire time. I'll ask a question, pause, then give the answer. See how many you get. Question 1. What are the four quadrants of Ansoff's matrix? Market penetration, product development, market development, and diversification. Question 2. What does Porter mean by stuck in the middle? A business that fails to commit to either cost leadership or differentiation, achieving no sustainable competitive advantage. Question 3. Name the 4 perspectives of the balanced scorecard: financial, customer, internal processes, and learning and growth. Question 4. What is the difference between a corporate objective and a tactic? A corporate objective is a long-term, measurable goal aligned with the mission. A tactic is a short-term operational decision. Question 5. What are Elkington's 3 P's? Profit, people, and planet. How did you do? If you struggled with any of those, go back and review that section. Retrieval practice is one of the most powerful revision techniques you can use. Let's wrap up. Today, we've covered the objectives hierarchy, from mission statement down to tactics. We've explored Ansoff's matrix and the 4 growth strategies, with risk increasing as you move toward diversification. We've applied Porter's generic strategies and understood the danger of being stuck in the middle. We've seen how the balanced scorecard broadens our view of performance beyond pure financials. And we've connected strategy to CSR through Elkington's triple bottom line and Carroll's pyramid. In the exam, remember, apply models to the specific business context in the case study. Don't just define them. Use the Agile framework for evaluation. Calculate data rather than lifting it. And always distinguish strategy from tactics. You've got this. Good luck, and I'll see you in the next episode.